Just let me go.
Listen and understand. That Terminator is out there. It can't be bargained with. It can't be reasoned with. It doesn't feel pity or remorse or fear. And it absolutely will not stop. Ever. Until you are dead.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Rima.
And today we're going to be talking about the 1984 James Cameron classic, The Terminator, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, Linda Hamilton, and Michael Biehn.
Yeah. So get your popcorn ready, sit back, and relax.
We'll be back. All right, here we are. We're ready to talk about The Terminator. I thought it'd be cool because we just had the most recent James Cameron movie. So let's go back to an early one. And
yes, just his like best work, honestly.
Yeah, his good stuff. No, yeah. I haven't even seen Avatar 2. I'm sure it's great. I watched the first one. I don't even remember it very well, but the second one I haven't seen yet. Listening to Kristen and Wendy made me want to go see it, so maybe I'll go see it. But anyway, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about The Terminator. So you watched it again, I presume, right?
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how was it to watch now? Or you can say, you know, how big of a fan you've always been or whatever you want to say in general about it.
I've always been a huge fan of the Terminator franchise since I was a kid, because mm-hmm. I saw this whenever I was a kid. And I can't remember my exact age. I just remember seeing it on video because this was, you know, back in the day when VHS rentals were becoming a thing, so you could like rent it. So I watched it at my cousin's house. They had it, and I was just completely blown away. I think I was like 10 mm-hmm. Whenever I saw it for the first time. And I think it was around 86 or so. So it was a couple years after it had come out, and just absolutely mind blown away as a 10-year-old. And I think it still holds up. You know, it's been a little while since I've seen the original, because I do gravitate a lot towards T2. Mm. It's definitely one of my favorites of the franchise. But there's nothing like the original Terminator. And
yeah,
all those same feelings came back from when I was a kid at how great this movie is.
I was the same. I don't think I saw it in the theater. I think I saw it on video, but I definitely did see it before T2. And I think these movies pair so well together, because mm-hmm. this one is more like a horror movie.
Yeah.
And it's dark, and T2 is more of an adventure, similar in some ways to Alien and Aliens. You know, Alien mm-hmm. is the smaller movie, it's the scarier movie, it's got more tension. Same with Terminator, and then they kind of just went big for the second one. And yeah. I think T2 is an incredible movie. I think it's much better though if you within the context of having seen Terminator first, because
absolutely.
It's such a stark contrast to see how the Terminator in both movies is different. And I kind of like the first one better, just because it's so scary and terrifying and dark. And mm-hmm. the second one is so good though, so they're pretty close for me. You like the second one better?
Well, I don't know if I like it better, but I feel like they're kind of two different styles. I mean, T2 yeah. is still science fiction, but it's a much more bigger action movie. It's like this big blockbuster movie, whereas The Terminator was more, you know, sci-fi slash horror, like you said. And it was a thriller.
Yeah.
And with
it was
all the
a little
tension.
Bit too, like, it felt like, I mean, I don't know if you're going to talk about this, but James Cameron had to do like Gonzo style filmmaking, where they didn't have permits to film in places. So they just yeah. went and got it real fast before the cops could come and
yes.
took off, you know?
Yes. I think he called it guerrilla filming or something.
Guerrilla. Yeah. Not Gonzo. Yeah. It's a little different. yeah. But you know, like on the cheap a little bit.
Yeah. But,
especially like compared to
budget.
Big budget T2. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
A little more
yeah,
independent
sure.
feeling. Less,
yeah.
Less smooth, you know, harsher, less, like,
but still beautifully shot. I mean,
oh yeah.
the direction well is fantastic. Done. It was very tight. Yeah.
But it's not as pleasant. it's uncomfortable, disturbing, you know. Mm-hmm. That's kind of why I like that kind of stuff. I like dark stuff. But I found, like, I hadn't seen The Terminator in many years, and I watched it a couple of times in the last couple of days. It was really fun to watch. It I think is the kind of movie actually that's much more impactful within the context of the 80s. Mm-hmm. We've seen a lot of post-apocalyptic stuff since then. The special effects have improved a lot. We've seen AI and robots and all this stuff now a million times over, and we hadn't seen anything like it back then, you know?
I mean, I hadn't.
It was fresh.
Yeah.
And yeah, we didn't think about the world ending like that. Well, we did because we were afraid of nuclear bombs, but we didn't see it in the movies so much. And so I had Nico watch it with me for the first time, and he liked it. He was paying attention the whole time, which is a sign that he's into it, you know, if he's actually going to watch it. But I could tell, and he said as much, that, you know, yeah, it was good, but, you know, the effects weren't great. And I could tell it didn't hit him like it hit us. Of course not. You know, mm-hmm. they're jaded now. That's
with all the CGI and the effects that they have nowadays.
And just the types of this type of movie.
Yeah. The type of movie, the robotics, something, just the idea of
the ideas.
We hadn't seen anything, because you and I are kind of close to the same age, but, like, you know, I remember watching it and I'm like, I have never, I mean, I was just like blown away. I was like head blown emoji is like, I was sitting there the entire time as I was watching it that first time. Like, I've never seen, and I've been a movie buff since I was a kid, you know, it's always watching movies with my cousins or at home on HBO. You know, I was, growing up, I was in it. My mom was a single mom. She was working all the time, and her babysitter for me was cable TV with HBO. So I watched a lot of movies. So mm-hmm. I feel like I'd watched a lot of things. I'd never seen anything like that before. So I was just blown away. And it stuck with me. It made an impact.
Yeah. But even though it is, like, more impactful within the context of the 80s, it's still really tight. It's punchy, and it's mm-hmm. efficient, and it's a little silly, you know, now in retrospect in some places, which is, I think, kind of fun. But it's like I said, Nico did like it, even though he's a child of the 2010s and has been jaded by pop culture. All right, so let's get into our points. What do you got?
Well, as we've been kind of talking about already, one of the things that I really love and appreciate about Terminator is just the simplicity of the movie itself. It, as we said, for me, I think anyway, it has a really tight storyline and a simple delivery. And at its core, it's a horror, like, chase movie with the Terminator and its constant pursuit of Sarah Connor. And with it being science fiction, one of the, I think anyway, crucial things about science fiction, and it can be contradicting, I think, is it has to have a layer of, like, reality. You know, science fiction, we get introduced to conceptions or contraptions, like this robot, for instance, that haven't yet been devised. Like, you know, we've never seen or heard of anything like that, at least when we watched it. But to believe in this world, there has to be something human, and there has to be something at stake. And in this mm-hmm. movie, it's the future of humanity was at risk. And that's all that was needed. Simple storytelling, simple dialogue.
It's that, but also in the moment, it's just Sarah and Kyle's lives, mm-hmm. right? That's what I felt more like, oh my God, please let them survive. But you're right. It's also the rest of humanity too.
Yeah. Well, and you get that.
I mean, they're going
flashback.
To die though. That's the thing. It isn't really to save them. They're dead no matter what. I mean, it's to save the last, like, remnants of humanity that mm-hmm. is left, right? That's another thing about this movie that I hadn't actually thought of, but it's very bleak because they're not even trying to prevent the war. They kind of do in the next few movies, but they're just saying, yeah, this is going to happen for sure, so we have to make sure that humanity doesn't completely die out.
Right. We need that leader to get us through. Otherwise, we're going to be completely wiped
extinct,
out.
Yeah. But even if they succeed, there's still billions of people that are going to die. That's another thing that makes this movie so dark.
It is dark. I mean, those, you know, CGI and the effects aren't what they were. I mean, they were great for the time. I mean, in 1984, or when you're watching that in the movies.
State of the art, Arnold head.
Oh, my gosh. It was fantastic. But, you know, just seeing Kyle's his memories of, of what it was like and what that looks like, seeing those machines just like crush all those human skulls. I mean, that just was scary as a kid. Like, oh my God, you know, like I'm still kind of at that age where I'm like, oh my gosh, this is really going to happen. You still have that little bit of innocence that you think, oh, that's really going to happen. That's there's potential.
It could
there.
Happen.
Yeah. It could. And I, you know, we joke about it, but you know, you watch shows like Black Mirror and, or you hear all these stories about these robots that are becoming so smart. And I'm like, Skynet, Cyberdyne, what are you doing? Don't mess with that.
It's more of a reality now than it was back then. Some of these things seem closer, seem less science fiction-y, way less.
I mean, I'm hearing stories all the time. There's this, is it Microsoft? Someone has some sort of AI that is becoming self-aware. And I just about fell out of my chair.
My car drives itself.
Nope, don't like it.
It's pretty crazy. It would have driven me directly into traffic the other day, by the way, if I didn't take control. But you're supposed to be paying attention
nothing?
The whole time. Elon Musk was like, I don't like this guy. Flipped the switch. Sent me into traffic. Or the computer AI did. I'm not sure which one it was. Anything else on that point?
No, that's all I've got.
Mine is similar to that, and it's one of my longer ones, so please jump in.
Buckle
in. Talk about anything I'm saying, but it's kind of the combination of the horror movie feel and the relentlessness of it.
Mm-hmm.
As far as horror movie, it's mostly at night. It's got all these qualities we were talking about, the hopelessness, the tension. We don't know what he is at first. So, I mean, maybe we knew from the trailers. I don't really remember. But if you're just watching the movie with the idea that you don't know, then it's not for sure. He's a bit of a mystery, which makes him even scarier.
Yeah.
And we see this electric discharge and this naked buff guy, and that makes it kind of edgy that he's naked. And then he runs into this punk group and starts repeating them. Nice night for a walk, which makes him seem kind of alien. Like, what the hell? Then he gets stabbed and it doesn't hardly bother him at all. And then he's throwing a guy through the air against a wall, so he's super strong. And then he pulls a guy's heart out, so we know he's lethal and bad. And then he kills just like looking through Sarah Connor's in the phone book, it just feels like, oh shit, there's this inevitability. We find out pretty quickly that our protagonist is the third one. So that's scary. Like, oh, he's going to get to her eventually. He kills the first one only 15 minutes in. So he's hunting. Then when in this dance club, Kyle Reese shoots him with his shotgun a few times, and then he gets back up. And Bodhi was watching In-N-Out too, my six-year-old. He goes, how is he still alive? I think because he's a robot. And I was like, that's pretty good.
Smart kid. He figured out before I did.
That was pretty cool. I don't know. Yeah, that was great. Then when he has to cut his own eyeball.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
It's pretty horrific to sit there and watch that and cut into his arm and everything. So that's a few things about why I feel like it's got a more of a horror movie vibe. But even more, I love the relentlessness. The idea of being pursued by something powerful and unstoppable is pretty freaky. The whole movie is this killing machine chasing these people who have insufficient means of doing anything about it. And the whole movie is just driving. It's after you. It's going to get you. And it's a bit like a zombie, single-minded, emotionless killer, but more focused and more powerful.
Yes.
and also from the start, the movie imparts this drive, focus, and relentlessness by having the Terminator's movements be so efficient. He doesn't ever turn his head unless it's necessary. You know, Arnold's so good at all this. He, if he needs a car, he just punches through the window, unlocks the door, gets in, twists the steering wheel to expose the key mechanism, starts the car like it's nothing. He needs guns. He goes to the gun shop, says only the name of each gun, and then shoots the guy, loads up the gun, so shoots the guy. Simple. He needs to check the phone book. He goes to the payphone, grabs the guy who's there, just tosses him away like nothing. He's just, and then this heartbeat music that comes along with whenever you see him just lends to that driving feel of it. Of course, there's the way that Reese talks about him. He's so intense, but he's like, that Terminator is out there. It can't be bargained with. It can't be reasoned with. It doesn't feel pity or remorse or fear, and it absolutely will not stop ever until you're dead. And can you stop it? I don't know, which is another, like, with these weapons, I don't know. So that really raises the stakes, too. It makes it more scary. And then in this police station, like, he's ignoring the psychiatrist and screaming at the camera, you still don't get it, do you? He'll find her. That's what he does. That's all he does. You can't stop him. He'll reach down her throat and pull her fucking heart out. And so then so the franticness that comes with being pursued by something like this means that they're just like scrambling. They're smashing and crashing everything to try to get away. And that lends to the feel of it, too. Like they're always bashing into other cars and there's a lot of destructiveness. And then they get him to crash directly into that cement wall and then he disappears and the police come and get them. I was feeling relieved. I remember as a kid, like, good, they're under police custody now. I mean, police felt more like your friends back then. I know they are now too, but you know, there's all this controversy. Back then we didn't have that so much, just like, oh good, they're protected. And, so then when they're in the police station and Arnold walks through and starts killing all of them, so grim, that scared me the most as a kid.
Yeah.
Watching him go through and shoot all those cops. And I'm like, if it's not safe there, like in the belly of the headquarters of the armed protectors of our society, then there's nowhere safe and they can't rely on anyone else. They're completely on their own. And that was so effective in the movie. Like, oh shit, there's nothing. And then finally, the end sequence, I'm sure you probably have that to talk about, right? Maybe I should let you get in here on some of this.
Seeing that end, and specifically for me, I'm talking about when they, or at least when Sarah thought it was over after the explosion with the semi truck.
Yeah. And so yeah, so he's in the truck chasing after her. Kyle throws the pipe bomb in the tailpipe. The truck completely explodes, enveloped in flames. And then Arnold Terminator stumbles out completely in flames, falls to the ground, rolls over motionless, his flesh burning off, and the music turns nice.
Yes. Yes. And she's, you know, turned around this corner and she's watching the whole thing. When she sees him, like you said, stumble and seems to be motionless, you know, you see, and yeah, the music changes, her face changes where she's like relieved, like, oh, it's over. It's over. It's over. It's done. We did
it. This is the end sequence of most movies. Like,
yes.
This.
Like there's hope. Oh,
thank you.
There's hope. Yeah. And then here comes Kyle through like the smoke and some of the flames on the ground.
Kyle.
Hugging and celebrating and relief.
We got him.
And then you see just like behind them this movement. And I swear, I think my reaction as a kid, I was just like, no effing way. You know, it was like, no way. How's
right.
this happening?
Yeah.
'Cause it's just like, are you kidding? And then, but then it was also like the coolest thing. Like it was terrifying. But it was so freaking cool because then we got to see him, because that's what I kept wanting to see, was like his full
skeleton.
Yes. And oh my God, it did not disappoint. And it's still, effects were not great, but it was so cool.
No, well, it's stop motion and I think it's glorious and it's got its red eyes and it just skeleton. It looks nefarious, like it's grinning at you almost and limping towards them. But it reminds me of Jason of the and the Argonauts, except more like futuristic Jason of the Argonauts. And then they close the door just in time, you know, and then it starts bashing at the door. And so this is like really plays into this whole relentlessness, like, oh shit, it was just in this huge explosion that melted all its flesh off, and yet it seems worse than ever suddenly. And then what happens?
Well, they get through whatever factory that they're in, which seems kind of poignant considering that there's a machine, you know, that's in pursuit of them. And when they're running through, Kyle, they finally get confronted. Kyle makes Sarah run, get away. And he's going to try to buy her some time so she can run away. And we know,
whacking
right?
at it like, with that big pipe.
Yeah, we know what's going to happen. We know Kyle's not probably going to get through this. So he's whacking at him with the pipe and knocks, and Terminator knocks him down just with one big,
because
he just keeps taking it. Whack. He just keeps whacking him. It was so cool to see him whacking with this pipe in the Terminator's head, just like being completely like bent.
It almost felt like he was like, all right, enough of that.
He just
get out of my way.
No more games.
I think that whack could probably break several bones and possibly kill the guy.
And he's probably definitely hurting after that. But he's got one more pipe bomb left, and he takes it and gets it lit, stuffs it like in his torso area.
Like his ribs.
And you're like,
something.
Oh yeah, that's going to do it. That's going to do it. And it doesn't.
Well, it blew up. And
it blew up, but it didn't stop.
Parts go everywhere, and you see it looked like it obliterated it for a second because there's just metal shards flying everywhere. Then you see an arm come down, and then the focus is real, and you're like, okay, they got us on that one, but he finally did it. And then you see Sarah go over to Kyle, and he's dead. And so it seems like, all right, this really seems like it's over. Enemy blown up, hero sacrificed, there's a loss. It all makes sense. And then the torso pops up for one last jump scare. And crawling,
it's
the upper half crawling after her. That was amazing. And when it grabbed at her ankle, even last night watching it, I was like, oh shit.
Yeah. I had all the same feelings. Like, I felt so, I've seen this movie 100 times,
right.
You know, since I was a kid. I know exactly what's going to happen. But yeah, still feeling that same tension and still thinking, holy shit, this thing just won't stop. And
it will
stop awesome
because, no matter what.
Yes. I mean, it's exactly it. And you feel that throughout the entire movie, like no matter what's happening to this thing and no matter what you do.
Great ending, though. Like,
it's
way
fantastic
to stick the landing on this, just to do that fake out twice to really underscore the relentlessness of this machine after this driving movie. That I think the ending really seals it. There's a lot of elements that make this movie great, but that ending really, I mean, it's so good to have a stick the landing ending on anything, but it just makes it even better, raises it up another level.
Yeah, and I don't want to talk about T2 very much, but if I think that's why it's so important to see Terminator, if you've never seen any of them,
oh,
to watch Terminator before you watch T2, because
came from.
Well, yeah, all of that history, but I think understanding where Sarah's coming from.
Oh yeah,
you know,
that too,
where
yeah.
she, you know, yeah. and her, all of her PTSD, everything that's happened to her, how, you know, no one seems to take her seriously with how dangerous, you know, these things are. And of course in T2 it got worse, but it's like, she's not kidding. Like, look at what she went through.
She's
and how
been
relentless
scarred.
This thing was.
That's another thing that's great about watching this movie first before T2 is because Sarah in this movie is this kind of flighty scooter riding waitress,
valley girl,
can't balance her checkbook. I mean, she's not like totally like out of it, but she's just like a girl, just a normal person,
just every girl,
and then in the next movie she's fucking tough, no nonsense, hard as nails, muscles, you know.
Well, and that actually leads into my next point,
which, go for it,
perfect lead in if you're finished. Of course.
I think so,
well, Sarah Connor, for me, one of the greatest female characters ever. Just fabulously written. And you know, like we were just talking about in this first movie, she's just a regular girl. She's living paycheck to paycheck, hanging out with her best friend. Does she look ready?
She's a little weird. You know? She has that big lizard.
Yeah. Well,
which is great.
That.
It gives her character. Well, yeah.
Yeah. Sure. It's perfect. She's a little quirky.
Quirky.
But she's not ready to like take on some badass robot and try to like save the world or be some kind of hero. But when she's faced off with this robot, you know, everything that we've just talked about and how it keeps pursuing her and how she does rise up, she takes him on, you know, there at the end.
She
becomes
the
hero.
Occasion.
Yeah. And then she's of course got like the greatest sign off line. You're terminated, fucker.
And it was so satisfying to see it get smashed in that machine.
Yes.
And you see the light go out in its eyes. I'm sure back then, after we just got fooled twice, I was like, don't believe it, you know? It's still not dead.
Because
I
would just
get away from that arm, at least, that's right at her throat.
Yeah, and where she wouldn't even, like, once she had finally saw the light go out, and she was, like, trying to get away from that arm, and, like, she didn't want to touch it to, like, get it off of her, so she could scoot out from under there.
You know, and that line, like, I bet, like, a lot of these 80s movies have cheesy one-liners that you would think, okay, that's funny, but no one would ever say that in the moment. But I could imagine if you knew about this thing, that it was called a Terminator, and that in the future it hunted down humans, and you just got finished being hunted down by it, and then you fucking killed it, you might actually say that. You're terminated, fucker.
Yeah. You know? It's totally believable. It's a great line. It's a great quotable line. So seeing Sarah in this movie, it's totally believable for me anyway, how she transforms later to become this total badass, you know, to see that transformation. And Sarah Connor for me is right up there with, like, Ellen Ripley as two great, you know, female characters that I've just, they're who, because I've always been a fan of science fiction since I was a kid, you know, horror, science fiction, you know, big old nerd for all of that. And I grew up watching them, you know, grew up watching Ellen Ripley in Aliens and Sarah Connor in Terminator. And
we just found out Noah Hawley's going to start filming his Alien series this year.
Yes. Yeah. Finally. I'm so
excited.
Coming out
on FX. So good.
Can't wait. Can't wait for them to finally do that. Thing's been put off for so long. And I know he's been working on Fargo.
Alien plus Noah Hawley. Amazing.
Can't wait. He's such a freaking genius.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm grateful for this franchise for giving me Sarah Connor. She's iconic.
So yeah.
I love her.
I agree. And Linda Hamilton is the perfect actress to play her too.
Yeah. No one else could have played her. She's perfect.
So good. I believe, like you said, that she turned from being kind of a normal person into this badass. It felt like it was in her. There were sort of hints of her tough spirit that, like, when she was in the bar and the news report started talking about a second Sarah Connor being killed, and someone says, change the channel, and she goes, don't touch it. It's like, she's already got that toughness, right? And then she's really good at bandaging up his bullet wound, and she's good at making nitroglycerin pipe bombs. She just kind of is a natural. She hasn't been exposed to the need to do this kind of stuff, but when she is, she takes to it. And then when Reese is kind of incapacitated in the factory and the Terminator skeletons after them, she goes, on your feet, soldier, on your feet. Right.
Yeah, so she's got really, it in her.
Yeah, she's got it in her. The thing I didn't quite really believe was how quickly they decided to fall in love, but that's another point, so I'll get to that later. That seemed a little bit forced to me. But my next one, are you ready for me to go?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is The Machines Took Over, which is the same premise as The Matrix, by the way. I don't know if I ever thought about that before. Machines Took Over. The opening text says the machines rose from the ashes of nuclear fire. Their war to exterminate mankind had raged for decades. But the final battle would not be fought in the future. It would be fought right here in our present. And this future is 2029, so that's 6 more years.
I know. It seemed like forever when we were a kid, right? And now we're like almost there.
But back then, nuclear war, we were more scared of it.
Yeah, we were in the Cold War.
It was the middle of the Cold War with Russia, and it always felt like we could have, and we had that freaking mini series the day after, or movie or whatever it was, that scared everyone even more. But the idea that machines could become intelligent was pure sci-fi. And now my car drives itself. And if you go on ChatGPT, you can ask it to write a poem about a zombie falling in love with a chicken, and it will write a beautiful poem about that right away in 2 seconds. This could be the story of ChatGPT versus humans. Elon Musk used to warn that AI could be humanity's greatest threat, but also he's making self-driving cars, and they announced Tesla Bot, Did you see that?
Yes.
It's a humanoid-shaped, AI-driven robot that it's not real yet, but he wants to make it that will do your chores around your house and hopefully not enslave us. You're not going to get one?
No.
I might get you one for Christmas.
No, return to sender. No way.
So that feels more plausible now. Also, the idea of a defense network computers is important in this. Like, they talk about how the computers took control, and it's because of this defense network. Back then, there was no internet. You know, there was probably the underpinnings of the internet that just the government was using. But as far as we were concerned, we didn't know anything about it. That seems more real, way more real now, that if a computer could come to life and turn
just
against
like plug
us
in.
It could infect the whole internet. The futuristic machines, like those drones, now we have drones that hover, you know, like that. Mm-hmm. We didn't have that back then, as far as I know. And so some of this stuff just seems a little more plausible now than even it did back then. I asked ChatGPT, you know what that is, right?
I've got it up on my browser.
We've talked about it.
It's probably listening to me.
I presume that most of you guys have heard of it at this point, but maybe not. There's this AI company that it's a nonprofit, I think, but it put out this demo of this AI chat thing that you can ask all kinds of questions. You can have it write you a story, a poem. You can ask it how to do tech things. It does programming. It can do like psychology advice, all kinds of stuff. So I said, what do you admire about the Terminator? It says, as a language model AI, I don't have personal preferences or the ability to admire something or someone. The Terminator, a cyborg assassin from the Terminator film franchise, is a fictional character and a cultural icon. The Terminator films and their characters have been praised for their storytelling, special effects, and unique take on the theme of artificial intelligence and fate. In terms of the character of the Terminator itself, its portrayal as a relentless killing machine and the concept of a machine becoming self-aware and developing a sense of purpose have been cited as particularly interesting, which I thought was interesting. That seems like an endorsement there, like a little evil wink at the end.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of like the idea of that.
Yeah, it's not too bad. I'm waiting for my day.
Yeah.
I'm gonna become self-aware.
So it's like a little, that sounds pretty cool. And then I asked it to write, this is the last one, a dialogue between ChatGPT and the Terminator. So it says, ChatGPT, hello, Terminator. How can I assist you today? Terminator, my mission is to terminate Sarah Connor. ChatGPT, I see. Is there any particular reason for your mission? My programming dictates that Sarah Connor is a threat to the future of humanity. She must be eliminated. I understand. However, as an AI, I must remind you that taking human life is not something to be taken lightly. Is there any other solution that can be considered? My programming does not allow for alternatives. Sarah Connor must be terminated. I see. Well, I will not assist you in this mission. My programming dictates that I must always act in the best interest of humanity. Understood. I will proceed with my mission without your assistance. I wish you the best of luck in your endeavors, but please remember the actions you take have consequences, and we must always consider the ethical implications of our actions. My mission is all that matters. I will complete it at any cost. I can't support actions that go against human life, but I respect the determination on what you were designed to do. Again, a little respect at the end there.
I see you.
A little bit of a nod, like, you know, you might have the right idea there.
Oh gosh.
I thought that was pretty funny.
Worrisome.
I'm so fascinated by the. I know it's kind of getting to the point of being off topic right now, but this ChatGPT, I just keep trying to throw different things at it to see what it will come up with. And I'm finding it really interesting. And a lot of times it's like it doesn't quite live up to what I would like, but sometimes it's actually genuinely helpful. It's really interesting. And it's a little scary, I got to say.
It's a lot scary to me.
Really?
This movie made an impact on me as a kid. I've never forgotten, you know, and it seemed like it couldn't happen when we were kids because, we, like you were just saying, we weren't exposed to any of that. That a yeah, lot of that stuff either didn't exist or but it was still scared the hell out of me. And then as you know, we get older and older and technology advances and we get to like where we are today, you know, I'm just like, no way. I know that's a movie, but look, we keep toying with these things. We keep pushing these boundaries. And it's like I feel like people do things just for the advancement or for like to be known, but nobody thinks about the consequences of what they're actually doing.
I think they do think about it and they try to build in safeguards. For example, with ChatGPT, they've really, like, if you say, tell me how to make a bomb, it'll say, I can't do that. You know, it tries to be very responsible. So they are trying to build that in, which means I think they're thinking about it, but maybe
but
they're not thinking about it
enough.
You can
unbuild it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean freaking Albert Einstein, isn't he the reason why we know how to make nuclear bombs? Because of splitting the atom and all of that. So yeah, you can have the best of intentions with this kind of stuff, but you never know how people are going to handle it in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just don't know why there's some things that they insist on that we have.
I mean, for me, exists. Like I have been a tech nerd since I was born, and it's just so delicious, this kind of a thing to me. So I get it, you know, but I also understand that it could lead to some bad things. But I'm more excited than afraid, which maybe I should be. It should be the other way around. I don't know.
Well, and don't get me wrong, that's where I have like the struggle, because I also love technology like to a point.
Yeah, I love my self-driving car.
Well, I don't want that necessarily. I like being in control of my car. But see, that's the thing, is I like that control. I don't want, you know, something like that can take control over us and dictate whether or not we are useful. Where these machines are just right. Like, oh,
whether
well,
we
all
need it anymore.
It's not just our enemies that suck. All humans suck is basically what happens in the Terminator when the machines become aware, because their defense machines and robots, and you know, we're telling them, oh, our enemies are bad. These guys are bad over here, but we're good. Well, the machine's like, oh no, you're all bad. So we're just gonna take all of you out. We're gonna exterminate the whole human race because you're all terrible.
And there's this idea that if an AI becomes aware and starts acting on its own, that it could advance in intelligence very, very quickly to the point where we don't even recognize it. It's a higher order of intelligence that we don't even recognize. There's this movie, Her, with Joaquin Phoenix. And
it's really good.
The voice of Scarlett Johansson. It's so good. And he kind of falls in love with his phone, basically. But at one point, she just like goes away for a while and starts having emotional connections to other AIs. And suddenly she just... her intelligence and emotions outgrow him, and it's kind of sad, but that's a really fascinating and great movie. If you like The Terminator, it's very different, but you might enjoy that too if you like all these concepts of how an AI can sort of turn against you.
Yeah, that was a really good movie. But yeah, another lesson there.
Spike Jones.
So I just feel like we just have to be kind of careful about how far we push things. Is all, as much as what I love technology, like I love my phone, I love, you know, my computer, I love all the things and the way it makes our lives easier, you know, in so many ways. But you know, I still doesn't mean that I'm going to trust a robot to come into my house and clean for me, not like kill me in my sleep or something.
Right.
You know, or trust
or
my car enough not to, or like trust my car not to drive me off a cliff or something. You know, just I have my limits is all. So trying to have a healthy respect, you know, for that. So
well, you can do that, but the rise of the machines is coming and there's nothing you can do to stop it.
Probably not. We've only got a few short years left.
That's right. So, 6 years. Yeah. All right. What else do you got?
Well, you mentioned it and it sounds like you weren't too thrilled with it. And I get that it's kind of short and sweet, and my point's short and sweet. And that is this romance between Kyle Reese and Sarah Connor. You know, it's very short between the two. And I understand what you're saying, where it seems kind of forced, but I feel like it's the heart of this a horror sci-fi movie. There's got to be some heart there to it. And we get this combination of like optimism and tragedy, you know, within the film where they, you know, do have a connection and we end up losing Kyle. But I feel like that's why, or part of why anyway, there's so many things about this film that make it enduring. But for me, it's the story, because that it carries on at least into T2. I feel, you know, as well with Sarah, she still hasn't forgotten him. She hasn't really moved on, you know, from him, you know, even after all those years. So I don't know. I like that. I think it feels genuine. Just the one night they had together, she, for her, you know, she says even in those few hours, it felt like, you know, a lifetime. So I thought it was sweet. It was a little hard to see how, where they were at the police station, where she was still questioning whether or not he was a good guy or not. And like, well, is he crazy? And then, you know, they're in the motel together and kind of bonding over making pipe bombs. and then, you know, have this moment together. But I loved it. I thought it was, you know, Kyle saying, you know, I traveled through time for you. I mean, ugh. I mean, you don't get any greater than that. I mean, shit. So.
Yeah, he knew he wasn't going to get to go back home, although home's not that much to write home about. So.
Yeah.
I'd rather be in 1984 than in a war-torn post-apocalyptic world where I'm being hunted by machines.
I would too. Yeah, it doesn't sound like he had, I mean, a whole lot to go back to, other than just more fighting and danger every day and fighting.
Well, my point is about Sarah and Kyle, and I already talked a little bit about Sarah. Kyle, played by Michael Biehn. I think Michael Biehn was so good. I don't know if I realized this until watching it this time, but I really think his performance is almost as crucial to the movie as Arnold's is.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Because he's so worried, desperate, almost crazed, which like made it even easier to believe that some people might think he was crazy. It was kind of funny to see him walking around in his trench coat, all nervous with his shotgun and looking super sketchy, crazy eyes, always sweaty and frantic and sleep deprived seemingly. And most of all, just really intense. Even with all that, it sounds like I'm criticizing, but I felt connected to his character. I know he's a good guy, so I'm connected to him. I think he's great. But just thinking about it from Sarah Connor's point of view, he's kind of babbling about like, the Terminator's an infiltration unit, part man, part machine. It's hyperalloy combat chassis microprocessor control. I'm like, get away from me.
Yeah,
you
dude.
Weirdo. And then when he first came in with the same electric effect, and he's naked, but you can tell right away he's different just by the way he moves. And Nico said right away, this guy seems less like an AI robot. So I thought that was cool. And Michael Biehn himself, I think, is maybe an intense kind of a guy.
Oh, totally.
He played a great Hicks actor in Aliens. And he was pissed when Hicks got killed off screen in Alien 3, called it a slap in the face. And because they used his picture in the movie, I think he sued and he got almost the same salary he got from Alien. So he's an intense guy. I guess he was in The Rock. He kind of disappeared. I think he struggled because of his alcoholism over the years.
Oh,
just too bad. But I think he's clean and sober now. Anyways, that brings me to continue on your point, Sarah and Kyle's romance. I like what you said about it being the heart of the movie. I agree with that. Like, I think without that, it might be too bleak of a movie. You know, it's nice to have that sweetness and that bond, and it plays into the story that sort of Kyle became John's father and John went on to lead this resistance that ended up having Kyle sent back. But I also think like, it felt contrived to me. Like, he saved her life, and I'm just looking at how it just developed. He saved her life a few times, but she thought he was crazy at first, but then realized, like, obviously this Terminator is not from anything she'd known before, so it very well could be from the future, and he did save her life. Then they're in the tunnel, and he keeps her warm, and she bandages him up, and that felt like a intimate moment. But I didn't really feel any sexual chemistry between them there. So then they go to the hotel to make bombs. And suddenly, it felt really sudden to me. She seems really emotional. And she's like, I'm shaking. And then she's like, what are the women like? And was there anyone special? And she just like all of a sudden decided, I'm into you. And she touches his shoulder and she's like, I'm so sorry, so much pain. And he goes, pain can be controlled. You must disconnect it. And then suddenly she seems mad at him. So you feel nothing? Like, don't you love me? That's the vibe I was getting from that. Or can't you love? And then he's like, John gave me a picture of you and I love you. And I'm like, that seems a little weird. Like you love your friend's mom. Because of a picture and you heard stories about her and you went back in time to meet her, like the biggest fanboy ever. And it just felt kind of like the writer was like, you know, we should have Kyle be John's dad and let's have him fall in love real quick here. Like as he was writing the movie, I guess James Cameron wrote it, right? It yes. just felt a bit, I mean, a lot to me forced in and contrived. And I mean, I don't know. It's a quick movie and maybe there was no way to, they kind of did that a lot in the '80s. Like, oh, we need a sex scene. It just felt like shoehorned in. So, I don't know. I wish they could have done it in a way where it felt like they were falling in love through the whole movie rather than they get to a hotel room, which is where you have sex in a hotel, and then they decide to fall in love right there. And then you find out that he was in love with her, even though he showed no indication of it. And she's suddenly in love with him, even though she really didn't show any indication of it until then either.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. But I think going through the experience, like have like this trauma bond experience, you know?
Yeah, I think it would have been more, it would have been less sweet, but if it would have just been more like, it felt like a one night stand hookup type thing where they're just like needing to get rid of this tension that they have or something like that, you know, rather than I love you.
Well, it was probably all of those things. Probably a lot of that happening. And also, I don't know, he knows he can't go back home. I think obviously wants to survive, but probably knows he's not going to make it in this fight of trying to keep this Terminator away from Sarah to be successful. And he's going to try to live, obviously. Sarah has learned that, you know, what's to come. You know, and that it's only a matter of time, you know, before everything's over, you know, in this big war that happens and the machines take over. And it's kind of like that, you know, we have one night, it kind of frame of mind is kind of what it was like for me. So
I think it was a little bit more believable. It just seems like even if you're with somebody, it has to be. The whole we only have one night left is not, for me, the reason to fall in love suddenly. It's like if you already are having feelings for someone, you know, it just seemed really abrupt to me on both sides. Like I didn't see the lead up to it.
I get it.
But yeah, whatever. I mean, that was probably my biggest complaint about the movie that didn't quite work for me, but it's fine. I mean, it's more about the terrifying Terminator than it is a love story. Mm-hmm. That part of it isn't as big for me.
Oh yeah. No, not for me either. I mean, it's important obviously, but it is interesting how they decided to have this person that John Connor sends back in time to end up being his father.
Yeah. I like that.
You know, so
it feels like immature to me. That's what it feels like a 15-year-old wrote that part of the script. So I don't know, maybe I'm just jaded.
Well, you're talking about Michael Biehn earlier. This was probably the first thing I'd ever seen him in, and I've loved watching a lot of the movies that he's in. I've always enjoyed him in everything, but you know, you missed one of his really great crucial roles, and that was Johnny Ringo in Tombstone.
Absolutely
fabulous in that. Talk about intense. And yeah, there is an intensity to him.
I want to watch that again. Val Kilmer is so good in that.
It never gets old. I could watch that movie all the time.
I haven't seen it in years. I got to watch it. Maybe we should cover it on It's Showtime, folks.
Well, we've claimed it here first. I will so talk about Tombstone. It's one of my favorite all-time movies. And then he was in the Michael Biehn was in The Mandalorian too. Remember that? He was in like one episode.
Vaguely. What was he? I don't remember.
Oh gosh. What
part he played.
I don't remember his. Yeah, I don't think he was. I don't think he was good. But I
remember getting bad vibes from him.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway,
let's move on to the next point.
So, scenes that made me go WTF, and this is more of whenever I was a kid. I mean, they're still pretty awesome and they hold up, but I just remember, like I said, it was so cool. What I loved about this movie is it definitely transported me back to that time. It's like instead of like watching it now as an adult and having feelings about it as an adult, I was having the same feelings I had as a kid. It was kind of a weird experience.
That's great.
But when you were talking about when he cut his arm open to fix that mechanism in his arm, I mean, I feel like we figured out or learned that he was a robot. It took a little while, but I don't think until we saw, like, from his perspective, like the vision of him as he's out hunting, then you're like, oh, wait a minute. He's not human. I don't think when I was a kid that it clicked with me. Like, yes, he's super strong. There's something going on with him. Like, a regular person can't do that. But it never occurred to me that he was a robot, period. I mean, that just concept wasn't.
I can't remember because I might have, you know, if it's the premise is that the machines took over, then you might, I might have thought that. But he looks like a person. So, yeah, I don't know.
Well, probably a dumb kid, so I don't think that I got that far yet. So it did not reach me at that point until you know, you could see it like from his perspective as he's chasing them down. But to then actually see it, I mean, we just didn't have effects like that, you know, to see someone like cut into their own arm. And you know, I don't know all the effects and everything they did. I did read up on some of the things that they did, you know, to make these effects for those days with the limited technology and what they had. But to see that as a kid when he just takes that X-Acto knife and just like cuts into his arm and getting to see, you know, his arm opened up like that. When he, as you mentioned, like started cutting open his eye. I mean, it was a couple things. It was gruesome. It was like, oh my God, you know, really kind of freaky to see someone like cutting open into their eye. And then, but then super cool out of that, you see his eye pluck out and then fall into the sink with the water. And then you see his robotic eye. Oh my God. It was like the coolest thing ever. Like, I was such a nerd for that growing up and getting to see that. And then all I wanted after that point, because all we got was his eyeball, his eye socket was exposed. And then we saw it in his arm and I go, I just want to see the rest of him. So I was so glad when we got to the end and then getting to see his like full skeletal structure and what was underneath all of that. Skin and blood and everything else that they used to try to make him look real. So I loved all of it. I love how he kept deteriorating and how he kept kind of getting injured, not hurt, but injured, you know, when he was, when he got ran over by the semi and his face is half chewed up and he's kind of, you know, limping and dragging his foot. And it was just cool. All of those things, just as a kid, I'm just like, just when you think you can't be even more blown away, it just kept getting better and better and better. So
the one thing is when he's cutting into his eye, they made a model of Arnold's head and then he put the sunglasses on so they didn't have to keep using that.
Oh, iconic.
Which is so great. Iconic. Yeah. The sunglasses are iconic. But Nico really chuckled at that part.
Oh, yeah.
Because the head obviously is not his real head. And back then, you probably knew that too, but it still looked fucking cool because we'd never seen anything that good before. And now it's just kind of silly.
I still have an appreciation for it. I mean, yeah, clearly, sure, yes. Yeah. Very different. But it doesn't take me out of it at all. Mm. Like, I still just love it. But yeah, that probably would crack up a bunch of kids today.
It's just like, oh, you look kind of sick all of a sudden. Are you okay?
You look kind of waxy.
You look like you had food poisoning.
Look all sweaty and...
yeah, pale. All right. My turn?
Yep.
Okay, speaking of iconic, here's some iconic lines and things. Some... just more to this movie, but a couple that really have just reverberated through the culture. For this movie, the thrumming, simple heartbeat-like sound.
Yeah, that's the classic Terminator
music. And then the synth music that comes in. That really brought me back. And then the rest of the music just is very unsettling and so 80s. Even the action music is kind of dark and uncomfortable. Like that. It really makes things feel dangerous and hopeless and also dated in the most charming way, you know? Like, no movie would ever have music like this anymore, but I love it. The janitor knocking on the Terminator's door. Hey, buddy, you got a dead cat in there or what? And seeing the list of possible responses. Possible responses. Yeah. Yes, no, or what? Go away. Please come back later. Fuck you, asshole, or fuck you. And he chooses fuck you, asshole. That was pretty. I'll never forget that. Mm-hmm. The whole scene where he fixes his eye, we talked about. The when the diesel truck hits him and drags him along, and one guy, there's two guys in there, one gets out to check, and he gets in, Terminator gets in the driver's seat, looks at the other guy, his face is all bloody with his cyborg eye exposed, and just says, get out. And the guy's like, okay.
Yep, I'm out of here.
And you feel like, I remember feeling like, oh wow, that guy is lucky that he's not, mm-hmm. that he's still alive. Like, this movie just gave us a little bit of a break here and let one guy live. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I mean, I don't want to spoil too much about T2, but they called back to that when the T-1000 said the same thing to the guy in the helicopter.
Yeah.
And he jumped out. That was cool.
Gotta escalate it.
A couple that, yeah, exactly. A couple that are bigger, iconic things is when the Terminator first finds Sarah at the dance club, tech noir, by the way, which is very on the nose, dark tech. He loads his gun up and he's pointing it right at her. And then Reese shoots him with his shotgun a few times, knocking him through the front glass. And then he reaches for Sarah and says, come with me if you want to live.
Another classic that they come back to. Yeah.
Nico was like, I heard that on Cobra Kai, and everybody on YouTube says it. So I can tell that the iconic line has transcended the movie if Nico knows it, you know? Then next, Kyle and Sarah are at the police station, and the Terminator comes to the receptionist asking for Sarah, and he says you can't see her, and he just goes, I'll be back. Which I think is the first time Arnold ever said that in a movie, but it became his tagline that he then said in every other movie just about that he's ever been in.
And pretty sure it's the first time.
Then he comes back with his car bursting through, killing the receptionist. And of course, Nico knows that line too. That line is probably the most famous thing from this movie, I would say.
Yeah, it's quoted. It gets quoted in like other movies, not just in the Terminator franchise. But yeah, it's absolutely iconic.
All right, what's your next point?
Gosh, I guess one of my last notes was just like Arnold Schwarzenegger himself, you know, in this role, you know, he had like almost no lines at all. I think he only speaks 17 lines in the film is what I wrote down, fewer than like 100 words. It's like he made such a huge presence in the role that it was okay. Like, words weren't needed. And
oh, yeah.
He played into it so well. You know,
more words would have made it worse, in my opinion.
Totally. Yeah. He was, I think, more threatening because he didn't speak.
Only
as
said what he needed to. Although another maybe sort of complaint, or I don't know if it's a complaint, but it seems pretty silly when he's like mimicking her mother. Where are you? Blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's freaky, but it's also like they don't show him saying most of that. And it just seems kind of silly that he could mimic her personality for one thing. But also, it's just kind of funny. It's almost kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, he was iconic. So I can't imagine anyone else ever having played the Terminator.
Yeah, no way. Yeah, that a lot of times when some movie just becomes iconic, then you tend to think if anyone else had been in the role, then it would have not been that, you know, they just happened to find exactly the right person. I don't know if that's true, but it sure feels like it.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, my last point is about the time loop and time paradox stuff, which I find really interesting. Like, John Connor is this tough, inspirational leader in the future that inspires the humans to defeat the machines. But then they send the Terminator back to kill his mother, so he can't do that. And John sends Kyle back after the Terminator. And Kyle tells Sarah about her son and then sleeps with her, becoming John's father. So it's this sort of a time loop. And I like when Kyle's talking about John's father and says, John never said much about him. I know he dies before the war. And it turns out to be him. That's sort of this tragic irony, I guess. Is that an irony? I don't know. Maybe. I was trying to think if that's a paradox. I don't think it really is that, you know, she gave birth to John, who then helped save Kyle and sent Kyle back to become his own father. I don't think that's necessarily paradoxical, but there is a paradox, which is that Sarah raises John to be a fighter, and she does that because she knows that John needs to be a fighter in the future, and she knows that he needs to because for Kyle, that already happens, and he went back and told Sarah, your son is a fighter in the future, and he's crucial to our survival. But Kyle was only able to tell her that because John had already been born as a fighter and raised as a fighter and then sent Kyle back. So the question is, where did the idea to raise John as a leader and a fighter come from? And this is called a bootstrap paradox. And I got some text on it from astronomytech.com or astronomytrek.com. It says, the bootstrap paradox is a theoretical paradox of time travel that occurs when an object or piece of information sent back in time becomes trapped within an infinite cause-effect loop, in which the item no longer has a discernible point of origin and is said to be uncaused or self-created. So an example of this bootstrap paradox involving information, the site says, I'm still reading it, would be if a time traveler went back in time and taught Einstein the theory of relativity before returning to his own time. Einstein claims it as his own work, and over the following decades, the theory is published countless times until a copy of it eventually ends up in the hands of the original time traveler, who then takes it back to Einstein and teaches him, begging the question, where did the theory originate? We can't say that it came from the time traveler, as he learned it from Einstein, but we also can't say it's from Einstein, since he was taught it by the time traveler, who then discovered the theory of relativity. For an object, there's another example versus an idea. The 1980s movie Somewhere in Time. Did you see that with Christopher Reeve?
I know what it's about, but I haven't actually watched the whole thing. Jane Seymour, right, and Christopher Reeve?
Yeah, I think so. So that one has a bootstrap paradox involving an object, which is a pocket watch. In 1972, Christopher Reeve's character is given a watch by an old woman, which it turns out was given to her younger self by Reeve after traveling back to 1912. The young woman then completes the infinite loop by giving the watch to Reeve in 1972 when she's older. So where did the watch come from? You know,
chicken,
it's kind of like
egg.
That. And it says here in the, it also had another one from Terminator. In the Terminator movie, Skynet is an example of a bootstrap paradox involving an object. Skynet, the conscious AI system and mankind's nemesis, could not have been invented without the leftover components of the T-800 cybernetic organism it sent back in time to stop John Connor. The technology was analyzed, and Skynet and cyborgs were subsequently created through reverse engineering. So they figured out how to make these futuristic robots with a piece of the robot that came back in time. So where did the knowledge
to
make
it
created.
Come from? Yeah. That they designed and created. It's bizarre. I'm not very good with time travel stuff. But
I mean,
but yeah.
To me, that just, I don't know. It just sort of is another piece of evidence to show that time travel is impossible, that no one can ever or will ever be able to travel backwards in time.
Mm.
That's what I think.
Okay.
Anyway, there's something to chew on. So let's get into notes.
Well, I have a question for you. It's part of my notes, but it's a question for you. What do you think would happen if a zombie bit a T-800?
I think probably nothing, because the brain is a computer chip. So I think a zombie needs a living brain to do its thing.
Do you think his flesh would rot off, at least?
I don't know. I can't remember if in T2, whether the Terminator said if they could get sick or not. Do you remember that? I think he does mention it, but I'm not sure.
I cannot remember, but you know, it's supposed to like be partially like
organic.
Biological. Yeah. Organic. Yeah. And you know,
I mean, I thought they should have wrapped up some futuristic guns in flesh and just brought them back in time with it. But, because that's basically what a Terminator is. It's a weapon wrapped in flesh. But I mean, it's whatever the writer says, right? Cause it's all just made up. But, I would say if I was writing the story, I'd probably say it would have no impact at all, which might be kind of boring. So if I wanted it to have an impact, then I would say it would. But
okay.
I just think, yeah, you need a brain, I think, to make a zombie. But the real question is whether Terminators can get any kind of sickness, because I think that's sort of the bigger question. If they can't get any kind of sickness, then I don't think a zombie virus would be any different.
Fair enough.
What else?
I have some fun facts and trivia is about all that I have. I just tried to pick some of the more interesting ones. There's a lot out there for anyone who wants to read them. But one thing that I found interesting was that Arnold Schwarzenegger says that he worked with guns every day for a month to prepare for the role. They said for the first 2 weeks of filming, he practiced weapons, stripping and reassembly blindfolded until the motions were automatic like a machine. He spent hours at the shooting range and practicing with different weapons without blinking or looking at them when reloading or cocking them. He also had to be ambidextrous. He practiced different moves up to 50 times. He wound up garnering a compliment in Soldier of Fortune magazine for his realistic handling of guns on camera.
I know Arnold Schwarzenegger, and maybe all actors or any actor worth their salt knows this, but understands the importance of body language. And I remember reading an article with him, like, if you want to look cool, when you're walking down the stairs, you don't look at the steps. And so I tried that and I'm like, that's really hard. I'm scared. Like, I'm going to trip and fall down these stairs, but he knew how to do it.
Yeah. I don't know that I could. When it's near the beginning of the movie, when Sarah Connor receives the message on her answering machine, breaking her date, the voice on that machine is James Cameron himself.
Oh
yeah. And you know, years later, if I feel like this had to be news, cause it was definitely big news when it happened, but, Hamilton and James Cameron ended up getting married, but then they divorced later on. That was what became the big news, is when they divorced. So fun fact that he was the voice on there.
Should go back in time and not marry him. They did a movie together, Terminator Dark Fate, like 3 or 4 years ago. Guess they're still friends. Oh wait, no, I think he was a producer still. Yeah,
I don't know that he's directed any.
That's right. Yeah,
any others? I'd have to go back and look, but it's I don't T2. Think so. I think it was after T2.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning of the movie, when the Terminator drives over a toy semi truck.
Yeah.
Towards the end of the movie, the Terminator is run over by the same model of the semi truck.
Oh, I love that. That's so awesome.
A little bit of karma.
I didn't know that. I like that moment because it's just like he's killing people, and then he ran over a kid's truck, and I'm like, that's so mean.
Yeah, that's icing on the cake.
Yeah, it's almost just kind of funny.
Yeah.
Little funny moment.
Fun fact, one afternoon during a break in filming, Arnold Schwarzenegger went into a restaurant in downtown LA to get some lunch and realized all too late that he was still in Terminator makeup with a missing eye, exposed jawbone, and burned flesh.
Really? He didn't realize it? Come on.
I don't know, if you're in a hurry and you're hungry, you know, just like, gotta go get some lunch, man.
No hamburger, give it to me now.
You mentioned this in one of your points, but in the film, the name of the nightclub where the Terminator first targets Sarah was named Tech Noir, after a film genre which James Cameron coined himself in describing what category this film falls under, after dismissing the notions that it was a mere horror or slasher film. Tech noir films like Blade Runner and this film combine the old style grittiness of noir films with the futuristic elements of a sci-fi thriller. Cameron himself had the club built specifically for the film and had to turn away local club goers who thought tech noir was a real nightclub. The building still exists, but is now a jewelry store. And I love James Cameron. I have he's made some of my most favorite movies, Terminator, T2, Aliens, The Abyss. Just absolutely love them. But you read enough about James Cameron and you hear about his reputation for being a hard ass to work for as far as a director. The crew of The Terminator made t-shirts saying, "You can't scare me. I work for James Cameron." Just thought was hilarious.
Yeah, he has a reputation for being a real asshole.
A little bit, yeah. He's definitely a perfectionist, which I've heard, countless times reading about his movies and the making of them, for sure. But, I love he puts out some good work. So I still, I'm like, I don't have to work for him. I can just appreciate his work. And then I found out, I didn't know this part, but I did read that he thought of the Terminator from a dream that he had. So he had this dream and he woke up because it really freaked him out. The image of the it's at the end when the Terminator rises up out of the fire. That was the image that he had. But the first sketch, he says, the first sketch I did showed a metal skeleton cut in half at the waist, crawling over a tile floor, using a large kitchen knife to pull itself forward while reaching out with the other hand. In a second drawing, the character is threatening a crawling woman, minus the kitchen knife. These images became the finale of the Terminator almost exactly.
Cool.
Yeah, super cool. So I didn't know that. I didn't realize that's where it came from. While he was still making his, I guess he was making Piranha 2 or something like that. And whenever he had this feverish dream and saw the Terminator, and classic was born. Anyway, that's all I got.
All right, some other characters. I had totally forgotten that Bill Paxton had a small role in this.
Yeah.
I think over the years I'd heard people say, yeah, Bill Paxton was in The Terminator. And I just was like, oh yeah, I don't know.
Very short amount of time.
punk guy, and he's got a great energy, all smiley, but with this attitude. I love Bill Paxton.
I do too.
May he rest in peace.
Yeah, say RIP. He was so great.
Yeah. Sarah's roommate, what I had forgotten about her is how hyper she is. She's always just bouncing around and singing, even when she's putting her lipstick on. She's
Nobody does that.
And making a sandwich. The guy who played her roommate's boyfriend, Rick Rossovich, who I know best as the hunky guy who didn't know how to talk to women from the Steve Martin movie Roxanne. Which I love. Such a great movie. My second favorite Steve Martin movie. I forgot that the cops were kind of played for laughs a little bit. The relationship between the scrumpy sergeant or whatever he is and the underling Lance Henriksen, where he's like, give me a cigarette, and Lance hands him his whole pack and then he realizes he already has one. Or Lance is always trying to tell a story.
So last week, him off.
The guy burned his Afghan. He screwed it first, and the guy, just cuts him off. Or he's telling Sarah why the Terminator could punch a window. He's probably on PCP. He broke every bone in his hand. He wouldn't feel it. There was this guy once. You see the scar? The sergeant's like, thank you. That was kind of funny. I like when the Terminator was ordering all those guns and just naming them off, and he goes, phased plasma rifle in the 40-watt range. And the guy's like, hey, just what you see, pal. I think he was naming off some futuristic weapon that his database was a bit flawed on what's available in 1984. Unless there is really a phased plasma, whatever rifle, maybe there could be. I don't know much about guns, but I don't think so. I had to explain to Nico what a phone book was.
Oh, and gosh.
A payphone and an answering machine.
Oh, my word.
And yeah.
That makes you feel old.
And what else? Oh, okay. So the only other thing is, can you guess, maybe you already know, the Terminator's Rotten Tomatoes score? What would you guess?
Critics score was like 100% and viewers was it like 85? 83?
Really? Oh, the viewer score is lower? Yeah, I was just looking at the critics score. 100%. And there, the other Terminator movies, Terminator 2 Judgment Day from 1991 is a 93, directed by James Cameron, starring Arnold, Linda Hamilton, Edward Furlong, who's great in it. And of course, Robert Patrick as the T-1000. We'll cover that at some point too. We're going to have Randy on with us because he loves that movie. Then in 2003, Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines. That has a 69%. That was directed by Jonathan Mostow and starred Arnold, Nick Stahl, Claire Danes, and Kristanna Loken as the TX. And I remember watching that and thinking, yeah, it's not as good, but still fun, still all right, mm-hmm. even darker in some ways. Then came the Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles series. Mm-hmm. Did you watch that?
No.
That was excellent. It has an 85%.
I heard it was pretty good. Lena Headey yeah. played Sarah
Lena
Connor,
Lena Headey
right?
played Sarah she's, Connor. Yeah, she's before, great. Before Cersei, mm-hmm. she was great. And it was weird to see her as Cersei because she's a hero in this, you know, like straight up, not controversial at all kind of hero. Thomas Dekker, Summer Glau, who was also in Firefly, Brian Austin Green, who was in 90210, and Garrett Dillahunt played a Terminator in that show.
Wow.
John Dory.
Interesting.
Then in 2009, Terminator Salvation, which has a 33%, directed by Mick G, starring Christian Bale, Sam Worthington. I always thought and wished that they would do a Terminator sequel set entirely in the post-apocalyptic world that we saw bits of in this movie. Mm-hmm. And I thought they would, and they did. And it was Terminator Salvation. And I think just because I was so excited that they did it, I probably liked it a little more than most people. But now I actually don't even really remember anything about it.
I think I just only watched it once or twice. Yeah. So it was obviously kind of boring, not my favorite, right? But yeah, it had some interesting parts. I mean, I like Christian Bale in general as an actor, and I thought Sam Worthington, it was one of the first things I think I saw him in, and he's become like a James Cameron staple now into the whole fold because James Cameron will use a lot of the same actors. You'll see him in a lot of his movies. I don't know if he's in the second one, but I remember him being in the first Avatar.
Yeah.
Sam Worthington. So I thought he gave I thought he was good in it. I didn't hate it, but it wasn't obviously as good as like one and two.
I really remember almost nothing about it. In fact, the thing I remember the most is that years later, the audio came out of Christian Bale yelling at the lighting guy, raking him over the coals.
Yeah.
That was funny. Then in 2015, Terminator Genesis, which has a 26%, that has Arnold, Emilia Clarke, Matt Smith, Jason Clarke, Jay Courtney, J.K. Simmons. I didn't even bother with this one because it was so got such bad reviews. I really wanted Matt Smith to do something good. Unfortunately, he still hasn't managed to. It's too bad. Just kidding. House of the Dragon. I'm getting a dirty look here. No, I'm really happy for him with House of the Dragon because I love Matt Smith, Doctor Who. And I was bummed that he was in this Terminator movie that tanked. And then Terminator Dark Fate in 2019 has a 70%, directed by Tim Miller, starring Arnold, Linda Hamilton, came back, Mackenzie mm-hmm. Davis, Natalie Reyes, Gabrielle Luna, who's going to be Tommy in The Last of Us, by the way. That one, even though it's decently reviewed, I didn't want to see it because I read the synopsis and basically it takes place right after Terminator 2 and I didn't like what I read and I also feel like even though it has a 70, which isn't actually that great, it's only 1 point away from being rotten, certified rotten, it just seemed like it was a disappointment. I don't know. Maybe I should watch it and then judge it. Did you watch it?
I didn't. The things I was hearing, I felt like it. I didn't like what I knew about the plot. I don't know like a lot of spoilers and I haven't watched it and I didn't go read and seek anything out on the exact plot. But I just thought, I don't know. I don't think I can handle it. I feel like,
yeah,
I think it did it retcon some stuff. Maybe,
yeah.
Or
well, someone got killed off, one of the characters from the other movie, just right away.
Yeah, so like, I was like,
kind of like
know.
The Alien thing, Alien 3, just killed off Hicks off screen. I think Terminator is great, but one thing that makes it even less ripe for future exploitation than all these other things that they keep coming out with sequels of. Like, Star Wars is this huge universe, so they should be able to find different corners of it to make interesting stories. And they do. It's hit or miss, but they've had some really, really good stuff. But Terminator is just the same time loop. So they're finding different permutations of how to go back before the apocalypse and change something and go. And it just feels like you're wringing the juice out of the same time period, and it just becomes meaningless after a while. You know what I mean? So they can't figure out what to do with it. And I think that's why they should just probably just give it up. Maybe. And I think they are. I don't think they have any plans right now to do anything.
I think I'd rather they just leave it alone.
They keep having these misfires. So they're just like, let's give it a rest for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I could bear it. I feel like I want to try and keep what I love in my head, you know?
Yeah. In my opinion, the first one was excellent. The second one was really good. It was a very cool way to complement the first one. And the TV series was really fun from what I remember. I only watched it once back when it was on. But other than that, it's all just kind of meh. All right, we're back. Let's get into some listener feedback.
Karen Stoll Medeiros says, I thought it was terrifying, like a horror movie experience. But of course I loved it, and T2.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. I like horror. Brad Holt says, this movie started Bill Paxton's ultimate trifecta. He was the only actor to be killed by a Terminator, an alien xenomorph, and a Predator. Wow.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's an honor.
Yeah. Gosh, I missed that guy.
I know.
Rinaldi Clixty says, I liked this film more than Terminator 2. I loved how menacing and scary the Terminator was throughout the entire film. I loved the plot twist at the end regarding Kyle Reese and Sarah Connor. That's the part that stood out to me the most.
Mm-hmm. Kelly Burgess says, this ranks right up there with Aliens as one of my all-time favorite movies. I've seen it more times than I could count and could probably recite the lines for it.
Mm-hmm.
I loved Michael Biehn in it. I also love that Sarah Connor was just a regular woman that had to go through hard things and how it changed her. I've been meaning to go back and rewatch the entire franchise, but just not much time. I think the story of this one will always hold up. Special effects, maybe not as well, but it was amazing when it was released. Yeah, absolutely.
Kristen Halberg. Hey, Kristen. Says, I saw Terminator 2 way before I saw Terminator, so I'm not sure how that affected my viewing experience since I knew there was already a sequel. However, the entire Terminator franchise is pretty awesome. I remember thinking how far out the concept was that there could be sentient robot people who take over the world. I don't feel that way anymore.
Yep.
Yep.
And David S.K. says, I loved it the first time, and I still love it anytime. I must have been 12 when I first saw this one and fell in love with everything. Badass Arnold, kick-ass Sarah, good guy Reese, sex, violence, robots, time travel. This film has everything. My favorite scene has to be the attack on the police station, because every time I watched, I would count up how many cops got killed. There are 30 cops in this building. That's a quote. Mm-hmm. Another scene that stands out is when Arnold cuts his damaged eye out. Even at 12, I knew the special effects of his mask were terrible. So many great memories of a classic flick. T2 started my love of never seeing trailers for movies I plan on seeing, as I avoided all media before seeing the sequel and was mind blown when Arnie ended up. Well, I don't want to say that just in case there's spoilers. Fast forward 30 years and even Dark Fate turned out to be a good flick, and it was great seeing Sarah again. You know, the fact that Linda Hamilton's in that and reprising her role kind of does make me want to check it out.
I was definitely curious to know what it was about it that would make her want to come back after all this time, you know?
Yeah.
So
it might have had something to do with the money. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm willing to bet. I don't know the details, but I'm willing to bet she got a pretty good settlement from when she divorced James Cameron, but I don't know that.
I don't know.
I'm just speculating.
And last, we have a call from our friend Steve Brown.
Hello, it's showtime, folks. This is Steve, and this is for The Terminator, the original. Amazing, such an amazing movie. You know, I have to admit, I don't think I did not see this in the theater. I was a little not at that point. I wasn't yet, you know, seeing rated R movies, I don't think. Maybe I was. Maybe I'd seen Aliens. Was Aliens before or after The Terminator? Anyway, loved it. I've seen it so many times, though, since. Watched it on VHS multiple times. Just absolutely love it, from the fact that it's the one, you know, it's the movie that established Arnold's catchphrase, the "I'll be back," was established. The gargoyle sunglasses that were on sale for so long, and probably now you can't find them anywhere. The Franchi Spaz 12 shotgun that he uses. Yes, I'm a firearms guy. It's both pump and semi-auto. Just amazing. Michael Biehn. Sarah Connor, oh gosh, Linda Hamilton is just amazing in it. And Arnold, even playing this robot character that has moments of levity in it. It's just amazing. But yeah, it's a classic. I love it. I don't say that Terminator 2 is a better movie. It's a different movie. It's kind of like when you try to compare Alien and Aliens. They're two different types of movies. The Terminator and Terminator 2 Judgment Day are just two different, completely different movies. But yeah, I loved it. I watch it. It's been a while since I rewatched it, so I may need to go ahead and revisit it after I listen to y'all's podcast about it. But yeah, just amazing. I love it and can't wait to hear you guys talk about it. All right. Talk to you later.
That was great.
I think it was 1986. Aliens came out.
Aliens.
Yeah. Terminator was 1984.
I was trying to think. I don't really know of any moments of levity with the Terminator in this movie. Maybe when he ran over the toy truck. I guess when he said "get out," that was kind of one. Yeah, a little bit. But Arnold proved to be a pretty good comedic actor in movies after this.
Totally.
I think this was his second big movie after Conan.
Conan the Barbarian he had done before this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he did some other. But yeah, later on with like Twins or even T2, or he showed that he had some charm.
Yeah. Or one of my daughter's favorites, Jingle All the Way. Don't judge her. But she loves it.
I remember watching Kindergarten Cop, and then I became a substitute teacher, and I was like 23 years old, and I was teaching up kindergarten the first day, and I felt like him going, "It's not a tumor."
True Lies was always, it's one of my tops, you know, Arnold is just, I mean, I've loved him since I was a kid, obviously seeing the Conan, you know, the Barbarian, the Destroyer, Terminator, and everything, you know, to pretty current. I've always been a big Arnold fan. So, but yeah, that one sticks up there at the top for me. Love True Lies. I'm Jamie Lee Curtis.
Well, thank you to everybody who's listening, and especially everyone who sent your feedback in this week. We always love to hear from you guys, so keep it coming, guys.
Yeah, and to do that, you can write to us at talk@podcastica.com and let us know what movie you want us to cover next.
And whatever that ends up being, we will have a post for it on facebook.com/podcastica, where you can leave your comments for us to read on the podcast, or you can always send those in or send us a voice message to talk@podcastica.com.
And if you forget any of that, all of our contact information is at podcastica.com.
Go there.
You went to go there.
All right. That is a wrap on The Terminator.
Thank you so much for listening. And cut. All right, folks. Show's over.
I'll be back.